some page.
Oh, sorry, yeah, we'll do the opening bit. Thank you, Ross. Well, the opening bit. So that Andy doesn't get into. Right, I'm on page two. I've got minutes of the 1st of September and the 4th of October. Would somebody agree that I should sign them?
Yeah, I should sign them, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. That's it, that's done. Apologies, I'm told there's no apologies.
No, that's correct, Chair, Mr. Chairman.
That's right. Public question time.
That's nil.
Councillor sessions.
That's nil.
Members' item.
That's nil.
Called-in item.
And there are none, Mr. Chairman.
And before we go
Chairman,
into...
Can I declare an interest in...
Not... We're going to swap around the agenda.
We're swapping the agenda for a moment.
Thank
you. All right.
So at an appropriate time. Thank you.
And I'm going to do what Andy Lockram said. Would the officers please introduce themselves? And I'll start with the gentleman who has the unfortunate bit of sitting between Andrew and... oh, it's Mike! It is.
Me, Mike!
Mr. Winnington. Yeah. Would you introduce yourself, sir?
Certainly, thank you, Chair. Paul Beckley, I'm the building control manager.
Right. Craig, I know.
Craig Jordan, I'm interim head of development.
And the lady next to you?
Martin Manning, enterprise growth manager.
I asked that question, thank you, Martin.
Emma Fuller, chief accountant.
Alex Yandel, strategic planning and case making manager.
Who? That's a new name.
Harriet Mosley, planning policy officer.
You have to shout.
Harriet Mosley, planning policy officer.
Thank you. Emma, I didn't recognise you, to be honest, and yet we talked yesterday.
Because I've got my glasses on.
That's true. Right. Alex is busy doing something at Stone, so in actual fact he's asked if he can have his item dealt with first. And that's on page 43. So if you'd all turn to page 43. And Francis is coming to the table with him. To help.
Can you just... I didn't print that part, sorry.
Here, have mine for a moment.
Sir,
all right. Yeah, it came in late, and that's why it's at the back.
Right, thank you, Chair.
All right, when you're ready, then, Al. When you're ready. Okay, Alex.
Thank you very much, Chair. So, thank you for taking this item, similar to item then, in terms of the local plan exhibition in Stone that's taking place at the moment. So, this item was requested by a scrutiny committee. When we had an item in July in terms of section 106 and the process and procedures. So I'm really pleased to bring this item to you this evening because this sets out the financial position in terms of all of the section 106 agreements that the council have received are in the process of invoicing. So what you have in front of you is a fully updated item because all of the Section 106 agreements have been inputted into our Exacon system, which we've ever received. So it's a completely comprehensive assessment of the Section 106. And so what it tells us in paragraph 3.2 over the page on page 44 is that we've received a total of £13 million of developer contributions in total, of which half of that has been spent. The other half has either been identified for projects to spend or will be identified to be spent. But the other important thing to note is that we're currently invoicing for about £1 million worth of invoices. And we've got a further £6 million that, if planning permissions are implemented, that will be coming our way as well. But obviously, we need to make those future decisions once we get that money in terms of in terms of project spend. So in terms of headlines, we know that there isn't any money that we need to hand back to any developers, so we're safe in terms of clawbacks. Those will change in terms of some clawbacks to 10 years, some clawbacks to 25 years, depending on the type of contribution that's been collected. Now, the council, you will recall, on an annual basis, provides an updated infrastructure funding statement, and that runs by financial year. So you will be seeing that over the course of the next month or so. But this report provides a specific snapshot as of the end of October of where we are currently at in terms of money that we've received and money that is coming our way. What's important to remember or recognise is that there's always financial to-ins and fro-ins on a daily basis. So the actual amounts are always changing and being updated. But what we've tried to do here is present as accurate a position as we can for the committee here this evening. But rolling forward, there will always be that annual update that you can refer to through the infrastructure funding statement. And if there are any particular sort of projects that individual members are interested in, then do please come and talk to us as a team. I won't know the detail of all the 400 odd Section 106s that have been included or processed, but we're more than happy to take questions away and provide answers in due course. So that's a brief overview of where we are. So more than happy to hand back to you, Chair, if you wanted to take it page by page, then we'll be happy to answer any questions if I can.
Right, thank you for that, Alex. What we're going to do is to go through it page by page, and if you wish to ask a question, please indicate. All right. So on page 43, nobody. Over the page to 44. On to page 45. Okay, now over the page again to 46. And you've got the list there of all the project allocations. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, can I just get this right? We've got 13 million, and then is there another 8 million to be collected? Is that right?
6 million. So we've received 13 million.
Yeah. Shout, Alex.
We've received 13 million.
Yeah.
There's another 8 that potentially could come our way
if the
planning commitments are implemented.
Okay.
And the necessary triggers reached. Now, it's not 100% that we'll receive all of it, because as you know, some permissions will expire and they'll never be implemented. But there will be a significant proportion of that 6 million that we will get in the future.
Thank you.
Right.
Chairman.
We'll take Gareth first and then come to Mrs. Barron. All right? Gareth first.
Are we operating? The sentence that starts at the bottom of page 43 goes on to 44 about finance. Are we effectively operating two systems then? One which are independent of each other, so that you've got information on Exacom, but you can't verify that by information that is from finance. What does that actually mean?
So Exacom is a system that we input information into from our team, but we have to work really closely with finance, because they're the ones who actually oversee the invoicing and confirm the receipt of the the money when it's actually received in the bank, etc. So it's not that there are two separate systems, you know, working independently. We're working hand in glove, if you like, with finance to make sure that we're absolutely spot on with the money that's received and then what we have to spend. So it's really important, and we, you know, value the fact that we can work so closely together on that. Thank you.
Okay then.
Well,
Mr. Barron.
First of all, can I ask how these projects are actually determined for the funding? Because I'm just getting very concerned that apart from the Victoria Park, which is on page, I think it's 45, and the leisure centre, which is in existence, we don't, even at planning stage, we don't seem to be pushing, and this is probably not great, we don't seem to be pushing for any community use in Forbridge, apart from the ones that are central to everybody. And I have asked this repeatedly at planning stage. So can you tell me how it's determined that where this money goes?
So the projects that you can see on page 45 and over the page on 46 are the projects that we've delivered. And those will be based on the money that we've received through the development, and then they've been implemented in line with the Section 106 agreements. So basically, we have to comply with the legal Section 106 agreements in terms of delivering the projects. And some of those projects will have, you know, a community use beyond their immediate locality, as it were.
Yeah.
So, for example, Victoria Park, that serves,
the
whole of Stafford, exactly. So there are those projects. Going forward, we will continue to collect money as we have, and we'll allocate projects in a chronological order. So when we receive the money, we'll then allocate that money to the projects and spend it, so that we make sure that we keep that relationship going in terms of not being at risk of any of the money having to be handed back. So that's the approach that we're taking.
Thank you, Alex. It's just that Brooklyn Road, I noticed that Brooklyn Road, Charlie Road, and Halifax play areas have all been allocated funding. Wildwood Destination Park, no such play areas, wasn't it? There's nothing, I've asked for these at the repeated outline stage offline.
Okay.
If we can have some community use, because we desperately need community use.
So you might remember earlier in the year we circulated a sort of a pro forma, if you like, of projects that when they've gone through planning, we received the money. So we want to engage with the members in terms of the projects that are going to be delivered. And so clearly we'll continue to do that, so that we can make sure that the money that we received is spent on what it needs to be spent on. But we can't spend money on it needs to be in line with the legal agreement rather than a more generic sort of community. So if it says it's going to be spent on an open space play area, then unfortunately that's what we've got to spend it on in that particular ward where the development's been delivered.
Unfortunately, Mr. Chairman, it appears that a lot of the developers
don't
really want to know.
Thank you. Councillor Nixon, we're on page 43, because Alex has got to disappear somewhere.
Okay,
so 43 onwards. Right. Hang on. Councillor Cross.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Certainly as far as the Holmcroft play area, that took a lot of collaboration between the planning department, the cabinet member, and how that money was allocated to that particular play area. As far as I'm aware, the same process took place with yourself and the other ward member regarding the Charmy Road development. So it's a matter of talking to the people responsible.
Right, we're on page 46. There's a question I want to ask. It says here the Pearl Brook. 19. And the Pearl Brook appears in another part of the report, the path. So what does that mean, the Pearl Brook 19?
That's the amount that's allocated.
You'll have to shout at me.
Sorry, that's the amount that's allocated, Chairman.
Is it part of that money that's been held on another page?
It's been carried over because they were waiting for Bovis to undertake to fulfil the obligations that they had on that side. So there's been a lot of holding over for, I think, 4 years now for that work to be done.
For you, Chair, this actually relates to biodiversity elements of that scheme. So that money is the £19,000 worth of biodiversity related monies in relation to for that scheme.
Right, thank you for that. There's another question I want to ask on the next page. So I'm on for 47, page 47. Anybody got any questions? Would somebody tell me where Mansell Close is? I thought I knew Stafford, but...
Castlefields.
It's Castlefields.
Very first road in Castlefields.
Okay.
It was the... Do you remember the 75 houses coming through where we reduced it down from 80 to 75 and made the balancing bond?
So it's Castlefields. Yeah. Right, thank you. I can understand... I've got two hearing aids now. I can understand what Councillor Mrs. Christine Barron was saying, because she's got this big planning application going on, and there doesn't seem to be any comments made about her central area. But I'm sure they'll bear that in mind. Okay, we're on the bottom of page 47. And I will ask the question that nobody seems to be wanting to ask her about the invoice funds, that the total of 1.1 million has been invoiced for and has yet to be collected. Could you explain that part?
Sure. So we're now in the fortunate position that the Excom system has been fully updated. So we were able to then go and invoice on all of the section 106 agreements that have been signed. There's a difference between when a section 106 agreement is signed and then when we're actually in a position to be able to collect the money. So several years can pass between a section 106 being signed and then actually being in a position to collect the money. Over the last few years, we've been able to identify and then obviously claim that money. So that's what we're currently in the process of doing. The majority of that 1.1 million is coming through less than half a dozen quite significant planning developer contributions that have been in the last couple of years. So although it looks like a big figure, it is pretty recent in terms of the invoicing that we're doing. There is a few older ones, but the majority of that figure is fairly recent.
Right, thank you for that. Well, that was 47. Over the page, it talks there about future funds. Anybody got any questions on that? Councillor Mrs. Christine Barron.
Yeah, can I have someone for Bridge, please?
Yep, okay then. Anyone else got any questions they want to ask him before he disappears? You want to ask him, hang on, James is.
Yeah. It was under section 5.10, it talks about a potential sum of 6 million to be received to support. support local infrastructure. What infrastructure is that related to?
So it would be infrastructure that's specifically mentioned in section 106B. So if you look over previous pages, there's a different, if you look at table 2 or table 3, so there's examples of these types of infrastructure contribution types that will be coming our way. So each of those will also be contributed to by that 6 million, as long as the developments come forward and they reach their trigger points.
Yeah.
So, yeah, sorry, I didn't sort of provide a bit more to myself exactly what's included, but yeah, it's the general contributions to infrastructure in those particular locations.
All right. Councillor Brian Cross wants to.
Well, again, a prime example of the 106 was the dual carriaging of Beaconside when so many houses have been built. It's only quite recently that they have handed the developer has handed over £6 million to the county council so that road scheme can take place. So it's not a quick procedure, you know. As I say, that should have happened 6 years ago, and it's just happening now.
Right.
Just for interest, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm very grateful that that's just been mentioned, because it just allows me to confirm that the information in here is Stafford Borough Council collected money only, but the County Council collects money for education and highways, and that isn't included in these figures.
Yeah.
It's just what we manage, collect, and spend money on. So thank you very much for the reminder.
Just thought I'd mention it.
Absolutely.
Right, thank you, Alex. Before you go, you better explain to people what you're doing and where you're going.
Yes, just really to bring the committee up to speed. You may well have recalled on the 4th of October you considered the local plan preferred option. Then approved by Cabinet. We launched a consultation on the 19th of October, and we're now going through a series of public exhibitions. We had one on Thursday evening, which was attended by over 130 people in Eccleshaw. We had one last night with over 100 people at Nosil. We're currently running an exhibition in Stone, so I'm going to go back to that. So we had about 30 or 40 people to that one. And we have a further exhibition on Saturday over in the library in the middle of Stafford from 11 o'clock through until 3:45. So do please encourage people to come and see us and ask us questions about the plan. There are a couple of other things that we've done which were new to me this time. One was we did an online webinar and we had over 50 people joined us online for that webinar last week, and you will also may have noticed we did a local plan promotional video, and it was a 2-minute video that's on YouTube, and within the last week, it's only been up for about a week, and we've had over 2,000 specific hits of people viewing that video on its own. We've had over 6,000 hits on the web page for the local plan itself, option, but 2,000 just on that video. So we're really pleased that, you know, as a team about raising the profile of the plan. And so thank you to all the members for contributing and getting us to this important stage. It's much appreciated, and we'll be coming back to you in the new year with obviously the responses and the next iteration of the plan all being well.
Right, thank you for that. I haven't forgotten it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to thank Alex and his team, but especially Harriet Mosley, for getting this all put onto Hexacon. A few years ago, quite a few of you put a bit of pressure on me to get hold of the 106 money and to get it onto a system where we could all see it and understand where it was going, why it was going in a direction, and where we could spend it. We've now got there, and it's thanks to Alex's team, but especially Harriet. And I just really, from my heart, want to thank you for all the hard work, and I know it's been hard work. She She's gone back 30 years or more to put everything on a system, and now you can put in certain details and get it off for your area or for everything to do with like that 2G pitches. So now we're after a hockey pitch. I've got a figure there. It's just so much easier. So much easier, and I'm really, really pleased that it's come together. So thank you.
Well, thank you for that, Harriet. The point is, the Moses always do a good job.
Well, there we are.
As my auntie told me. Right, well, thank you for that. We turn now back to the front of the agenda, and it's Craig to talk to us. So we'll see you at the next meeting then, Alex. Take care as you go.
Thank you, sir. Do we have to note the report or anything,
Chair? They would like to note the report. Would somebody move it?
Yeah, so noted, Mr. Chairman.
Seconded.
Thank you. Seconded. All in favour? Agreed. Yeah. And for your benefit, James, after the meeting, you can taste the co-op mince pies and have a drink of wine if you want, or orange juice. It's tradition that the chairman brings these things in for Christmas. It may be a long time towards Christmas, but we don't have a meeting until January. All right, so we move back to page 4, and it's Craig going to take us through page 4.
Thank you, Chair. In September at your meeting, we brought you quite a detailed report on the various projects which are coming forward under the banner of economic growth, development and regeneration. And it was agreed at that meeting that subsequently this would be a standard item. So this is a report that brings you up to speed on those projects which have progressed since September and which are progressing. And if you are happy, we'll go through the detail and then take questions.
Yes, if you would, please.
So where we are with the Future High Streets Fund, obviously, to make just remind members, this is a government initiative where we've been successful in drawing down some monies to support regeneration in our town centres. We've got a capital sum of monies to spend, and we've started to allocate that towards various projects. Two of the projects which have got a very high profile around the Market Square and Station Approach, and you can see there in paragraph 5.2 that we've made good progress with regards to the Market Square. We will be having detailed works commencing in the new year, but before that there will be some opportunities for the team that have won the contract to explain to members of the public and businesses exactly what is going to take place, to ensure that they're happy with the way that we're going to work. And also the good news is we can accommodate the Christmas light switch on and actually have a Christmas tree in the Market Square, which I know some members were concerned we wouldn't be able to have, so that's some good news. We met with the contractors a couple of weeks ago through the Inception meeting, and on your behalf, I would say that we're very impressed with the quality that we've appointed. So fingers crossed that will take place, and we will see something up and running in the new year and completed in the middle of next year. With regards to Station Approach, slightly behind the Market Square, but we are working up the detailed designs for that area. Of course, if we bring that forward, that will enhance that part of the town centre and ensure that people have a welcoming approach to the station, and also when they get off the train and are coming into Stafford. And we're doing some detailed work there. One of the difficulties, as you all know, is dealing with Network Rail, who are not the easiest organisation to communicate with and get agreements on, but they are key to the delivery of this. And we are having that engagement, which is a positive. Station Gateway, Alex has just talked about a major consultation exercise taking place. We've undertaken something similar with regards to Station Gateway recently. Strategic Regeneration Framework, which is a bit of a mouthful, but it's basically the planning framework that we're looking to bring forward to direct development going forward. That's out for consultation, a draft version between the 18th of August and the 29th of September. We held a number of events, which some of you may well have been party to, and we've elicited over 200 written responses. A report will be coming to the Cabinet in due course, with the results of that consultation and some proposed amendments to the SRF, and hopefully members will accept the changes that are being proposed, once that document is in place, that will give us the basis, the grounding for going forward and working on what we will call our delivery strategy, so how we want to deliver the vision and the objectives and the plans that are set out in the SRF. So some good progress being made there. Meesbrook, obviously part of the local plan consultation at the moment, but also in itself we're doing some detailed work behind the scenes looking at two specific elements. So one of them is a detailed study looking at the rail infrastructure that could support Meesbrook if it progresses to implementation. And secondly, we're doing some master planning work. So far you will have seen a red line boundary, you will have seen a concept plan. The master planning works up the detail and starts to address a lot of the questions that people are asking us through the local plan consultation, because people are concerned about, you know, what the development mix will be, will there be sufficient facilities to meet the needs of the people who will eventually live within Meesbrook? What will the community facilities need to be borne in mind when we develop the overall plans? How people will access and move around the site, and what the impact of the site will have on the local highway system. So there's a plethora of issues that need to be addressed there. But I think the master planning exercise will be key to ensuring people are comfortable with the proposals and can accept and start to see more clearly what we're envisaging taking place there. Going back to the Gateway site now, apologies, we probably should have ordered this slightly different, but we now have a planning application in for the Carnbourne site, which is part of the Gateway area. Obviously we can't talk about that planning application until it's determined, but clearly if it is approved, then that will bring an Institute of Technology to Stafford, which would be a boom to the air. We move to Westbridge Park now at Stone, which again I know members are very keen on seeing delivery of this park. We are working at the moment with the contractors, Ground Control, who are the major works contractors, and also a company called Bencrete, who are concentrating their energies on the skate park. We have worked up a detailed design and layout and talked about the type of equipment that will go on site. And all of this will be presented to a meeting of the Stone Leisure Board in the next fortnight. Hopefully we will get approval then to submit a planning application to get the necessary consents to start work in the early part of next year. There are various funding programmes as well that we are bidding in for, or we are bid for, or we've been allocated monies for, but we have to do some additional work to draw down the monies. So here we have an update as far as we are concerned anyway, in terms of the levelling up fund, which we are bidding for to help us deliver elements of the station gateway site. That's about preparing the site for development and ensuring it's fit for purpose and has no nasties around. We're waiting for a decision from government as to whether we're being successful in that bid. As you know, through the UK Shared Prosperity Fund, we've been given an allocation of 4.6 million as a borough, and to draw down that money, we had to submit an investment plan by the 1st of August. We've done that, and again, we're awaiting an announcement from government. Once we have that announcement, assuming it's successful, we can start to implement that investment plan and the various projects and programs within that. And then we've also received notification of a around about £500,000 allocation of monies that will go towards our rural economy, which is timely given the paper that you're going to hear about shortly following this report. Again, we have to submit a mini investment plan. The money's there, it's in the bank, but we need to draw it down and convince government that we have the right plans. So we've got to the end of November to submit that plan, and once we do that, we'll wait to hear from the government. So there's a lot of funding there, which potentially could be released to us and allow us to complement the ongoing work programme. Thank you.
Thank you. Right, we'll do page by page. And I asked the question, there's no press here, but I did ask the question at the pre-meeting about confidentiality of the items, and I'm told we will not be discussing the confidential business. Right, so we'll start on page 4. Any questions on page 4? Questions on page 5. Brian Cross.
Market Square renovation. I hope within the discussions and the final plans that enough spare stone work, slabs, whatever, are put into it so that if they do break up at some time, it'll not be replaced again by this ugly black tarmac.
That is an issue that's been raised, and we will make sure that we've got surplus.
It's needed.
And there'll be no rocking of slabs as you cross them?
No, it shouldn't be. We've designed it properly, been advised correctly, and the works have...
I have to be very careful what I say next. Right. Anything else on page 5? Any questions? Right, on to page 6.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Right, Councillor James.
Newcastle and Stafford College, planning application. When's it going to be submitted?
It has been submitted through you, Chair.
And it will eventually come to the committee.
It says it has been. So when's it going to go to planning?
I don't know the actual dates as yet, but it's been submitted now, and obviously it's been approved.
Just to let the committee know that I have called it in, not against it, not for it, so very equal, just to look at a few bits on it. So it will come to a planning meeting. That's all right.
Thank you. Right. Okay, we'll go back to Newcastle and Stafford College. Okay then, Westbridge Park. Anybody want to talk on that?
Happy with it, progressive.
Okay then. At the bottom of the page, levelling up fund, round 2. And then move on to page 7.
Did we get the feedback by the end of October that's referred to in the shared prosperity plan?
No, we're still awaiting that through you, Chair. I think the government maybe have a couple of things on their mind at the moment, but we are waiting for the announcement. Hopefully will be shortly and allow us to start to draw down that money.
Have you any idea when we will be told about the money?
No.
It'll be Thursday.
Thursday?
Budget.
Because actually somebody else mentioned that to me Thursday. So,
you didn't say which Thursday though, did you?
No.
Not getting it.
Oh, right. We're having comments from these people in the public area.
Can you take control of them, please, Chairman?
He's standing where he is, I can tell you. He's not moving off that chair. Right, thank you. We move on to page 7. The Prosperity Fund is what he's been talking about, and the Rural England Fund. That's interesting. We do get $500,000. Okay, so anyone else on that page? No? Thank you for that then, Craig. Sorry? Yes, I have to keep reminding me.
Mr. Chairman, note the report, please. Seconded.
Thank you, seconded. All in favour?
Aye.
Down against, if any? Right, now we move to Martina Manning, and it's the rural economy update. Just a minute. Councillor Willington, are you moving to sit at the table?
He's an observer, Chairman.
Oh, he's an observer. I was going to say.
I told him this morning he can't speak.
Yes, we know.
Unless the Chairman authorises it.
Yes, you must remember that on this committee. The Chairman invites members of the Cabinet to sit at the table.
I would love the Chairman to invite you to the table, feel as that's rural.
Definitely.
Yes, I know. We'll talk about that in a minute.
What
okay, let's listen to Martina.
Can I just introduce this? Funnily enough, the first version of this document, I don't think Martina will mind me saying so, actually left out agriculture. And one of the problems that I've seen, because I've lived with working with the rural economy the whole of my working life, one of the problems that seemed to me was that people write reports in the best
faith but don't actually live and work in the rural area, and it's very difficult to understand the differences. So much is the same, there are complexities, there are differences. And I think it's fair to say she and I have been through this document endlessly. Marcus has played a part as well. I would like to commend it, as I think it's an extremely good document. We're waiting on the County Council to produce their county-wide strategy, which I'm slightly nervous about already. But it's very nice to see that we've got this one and that we've had the funding to recognise the work that we've been doing in terms of the rural economy. And Martin's done a tremendous job from the outset. So on that note, I would pass over to him.
Right, thank you. Martin, nice to see you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Francis, for that. As Francis said, I've been 4 years here now, and I've wanted for some time to prepare sort of a snapshot of the rural economy. I haven't been able to do this with COVID and lots of other business grants and issues I'm on. So it's been nice to be given the opportunity to do this and really delve deep into the rural economy. I've been sort of convinced that we've got a really, really robust, sound base for growing our rural economy. It's already doing extremely well, as you'll see through the report. And we need to actually maintain that, keep the momentum going, keep in front of our businesses, and sort of build on the growth that we've been experiencing within the rural areas. But this isn't a rural economy strategy, as Councillor Beattie referred to. The Staffordshire County Council have got their rural economic strategy out for draft consultation, which has been out, it's closed for consultation now back in May, so they're assessing this. This hasn't been put into action as such, so we haven't got our own borough rural economy strategy, because we're waiting to see if this is going to be adopted and if there's any other gaps that we need to fill that the county aren't sort of covered in this strategy. So it hasn't, it's on their website, but it hasn't been approved as yet. So I wanted to have a look at all the good things that are going on in the borough in the rural areas. And across the whole of the UK, really, rural economy falls into three things, which is tourism, manufacturing, and agriculture. Whichever part of the country you live in, those are the three key drivers. So one of the things that it's quite nice to say, sort of the business engagement team of the Borough Council, actually it's just literally myself and Mary Timmis, who obviously in Australia, we haven't got a big business engagement team, it's just the two of us. But we're both passionate about our rural areas. So we wanted to put sort of a bit of a rural profile together. So I think it's important that people sort of don't just think that we've got three wonderful towns, but we have this massive, massive rural area with a huge economy there. And it's quite interesting to see that, 91% of the area is classified as non-urban, which is quite, I didn't actually believe that when I first read it. I thought, wow, it really is a rural area. So through the work we were doing with our £50 million of COVID grants and £4.5 million of ARG, we built this bond with our rural businesses, and we got to know them really well, and we helped them out with various funding, and we got to build a picture of what they felt was good about doing business in Stafford Borough, particularly the rural areas. So we've built this nice sort of database of businesses that we've got sort of really transactions with. But the rural profile there, I thought, sort of sets the tone in terms of how rural we are, and the fact that if you look further down, 33% of our residents reside in our rural areas, which is greater than any other sort of district in Staffordshire. So we need a strong rural economy to sort of support the people that that live there. I was referred by Councillor Beattie to look at the Rural Services Network, which we're a member of, the Borough Council, and they did a rural cost of living report in July of 2022, which I'm happy to share at some point if everybody wants to see. But it really sort of set the tone for the issues that people in the rural areas face. Rising house prices, secondary homes, the wages are lower in rural areas. Rural households spend more money on shopping. Rural households spend more money on transport. So it's quite a challenge, really, that we face to ensure that we provide a good rural economy to support the residents, given the factors that we have in front of us. So that's the rural profile. I wanted to come on to 5.2, which is the enterprises, because Mary and I have got sort of 5,500 businesses in the borough that we look after. And so we looked at all of those that are on our business rates database, which we have access to, Mary and myself confidentially, but we're doing sort of studies like this. So we were able to find that there are 2,000 businesses out of the 5,500 that are based in our rural areas. And when we talk about rural areas, what I did was to look at the rural wards on our website. So we've actually done this by rural wards and determined it that way. DEFRA look at things slightly different. They've got different boundaries for all the rural areas. And then you could look at other, it's a bit of a mixture at the moment, but we thought we'd just focus on rural wards and see the businesses, map them over in those rural areas. So you can see there that we've got 36% of our businesses are in the rural areas, and the statutory average is 28% of the businesses in general are rural based. Lots of good things going on. We've got a real broad spectrum of rural businesses. We've got entrepreneurs, we've got enterprises, which are sort of 10 to 50 employees. We've got corporates, more than 250 staff. And then we've got this massive base of sole traders, one-man bands, and entrepreneurs, which we don't have that much information on because they normally tend to be domestic-based. So we're trying to pick those out from all of the business data that we've got. But as you can see from there, there's the same difficulties that they face whether a business is urban or rural. It's the cost, it's the energy crisis, it's the cost of fuels, it's staffing, it's recruitment, lots and lots of issues that they're facing at the moment, cost of raw materials. But I think unlike the urban areas, the rural businesses also face other challenges in terms of attracting youngsters to come and take up some of the work there, travel implications, can people actually get to a job in a rural area, are the local shops where, you know, if you worked in an urban area like in Stafford, you could have your lunch, you could pop to Marks and Spencer's, you can do something else. If you're based rurally, 9 times out of 10, you're in that rural business park with not a lot going on around you. So we realise it's a big issue at the moment in attracting skills into the rural area. But we're working on that. So sort of a couple of things there that Mary's been doing really well, which we're really pleased about, because we've never had the chance to do before. And that's to go out and visit all of the rural, what we call clusters, of business parks, industrial parks. And this could be something sort of like Raleigh Hall, which is a huge industrial park, or it could be a smaller hub like Sugnell Enterprise Centre. So we've mapped out this 38 what we call clusters, where there's more than 3 or 4 businesses concentrated in one particular area. And we've put all these into a database. So we've listed every single commercial premise that we've got in the rural areas, and we're at 97% occupancy rates now, which is really high. So in other words, 3% of our rural business parks and industrial sites are empty. We still receive business rates from those empty premises. But if somebody has vacated the premises, we still receive the business rates from them. But what we try and do is make sure that we work with all the commercial agents, all the landowners, all the business support companies, so that we become the go-to place, if you like, if somebody's looking for rural premises. So we've actually got quite a nice pipeline, Mary and myself, so we go out and we generate inquiries, we go to various exhibitions, we go to online webinars, we put all the information out to the commercial agents to say, please, some vacant space. What do you need from us as the council to help you fill this? Because a lot of commercial agents have got a lot of stock on their books at the moment, so we make sure we feed them with enough information that they put Stafford at the top of their list when they're... It's almost like when you go and buy a house, you know, the agents will try and sell you the best house or whatever they want to get off their books. What we try and say to our commercial agents is, introduce the clients to us, the council, and let us help support them into making the right decision as to which property to move into. So that's a regular thing. Every month we go out and we visit the parks and we make sure that the data we've got is up to date. So as we speak today, we're 97% full in the rural areas. The other thing I wanted to look at in terms of our enterprises was sort of the green sector. So you can see there that the letter produced a snapshot of low carbon environmental goods. So this is hydrogen power, wind farms, it's other ways of sort of green technology, green skills. It's a growing sector, and you can see there that Stafford is the third highest in terms of growth. So we really want to support our green enterprises and introduce a lot more sort of green skills into it. So we're quite pleased about that. We've got a lot more work to do to engage with those. Just flipping over on page 12, entrepreneurship's really interesting because you'll know from scrutiny and following the report that I have to report on the number of new businesses that are created in the borough. That's my target, that's my KPI, if you like, to make sure that we attract entrepreneurship and new businesses. The only way we can determine that is by going onto the company's house register, because if somebody decides to start a business in their garden shed and they don't qualify for business rates or they don't need a license to operate, we have no way of knowing about that business other than to keep promoting ourselves and our team and saying, come forward and tell us. So we have to rely on the company's house register. So it's quite easy to do a search. There's 180 businesses that are registered in Stafford Borough in Q2 of this year, which is an enormous amount of businesses registered at Companies House. 85 of them have given rural addresses. So what we've been able to do is pull those out and actually have a look at these 180 and think, are there businesses that we want to grow? Are there people that have just registered at Companies House and they've got no intention of starting a business? Which are the ones that we really want to support, particularly in our rural areas? A lot of the businesses during the pandemic that were startups actually didn't continue. So one of the roles that we've got to do is to try and find out and support the people that made that decision. Maybe they were made redundant during the pandemic, maybe they were put on furlough, maybe they thought the time's right now to start a business. We need to keep encouraging those and reaching out to them and sort of, not convincing, but supporting their decision to start a business. But we can't do it for everybody. There is only two of us, so we have to really look at these 180 enterprises and find out which are the ones that we think will become sort of growth businesses for the borough. That's not to discount the others. We will put them in touch with partners who can deliver sort of light touch business support. But we really want to dig into the entrepreneurs and the innovators in the borough that have really started a business, seen it through the pandemic, and have still continued to trade over the next 2 years. One of the things I mentioned there about entrepreneurship is in the rural areas, because it's quite sort of, you know, a wide geography, generic business support providers, as discovered by the NICRE report, it's not economically viable for them to reach out to all of the local business areas, rural areas, and set up a workshop or go and support a rural business on a one-to-one basis. It's definitely lacking, rural businesses definitely lacking receive that business support from partners. This isn't us speaking, this is a report that's been generated in August, where support agencies are saying, actually, economies of scale, it does cost us a lot to drive out to our rural areas and just visit one business when we can meet a bunch of businesses in the town centre. So that's something Mary and I are looking at in the future. You know, how do we get some workshops together in our rural areas and bring businesses together to talk collectively and try and fill that gap that's not being delivered by providers at the moment. 5.4, this came about because that we've had a few inquiries where people have sort of contacted us and said, what could you offer in terms of community businesses? You know, we're thinking that we'd like to buy the local pub that's up for sale, and is there any support we can do on that side of things? Or, you know, the village post office or the village news agents are closing down, and you know, there's a group of us that like that. We have no idea, we've got no business experience, we don't know how to go about funding, we don't know what we need in terms of licensing or planning. Can you help us? And we absolutely can. Mary and I provide a one-stop shop, basically. Both of us have got over 20 years experience in business support, entrepreneurs and enterprises. So you know, we did a bit of research and actually you can see that the numbers are huge. You know, it's gone from 95 in 2002 to 800 community-owned businesses in 2022. Pubs, restaurants, cafes that provide that. But again, it's that stepping stone. Right, if you've got a business community and a couple of empty buildings and, as I said, pubs or cafes or restaurants, what can be done with those premises? Can they be created into becoming community hubs? What support do we need to put together? So that's something we're working on in the background to try and find out people that do want to do something with those empty rural premises. In 5.5, employment is the same across the whole of the UK. Stafford, we have a huge amount of vacancies. I sit on the county-wide skills employment group. We have meetings every other Friday with all the partners, all the delivery partners, DWP, a whole lot, to look at how we address filling some of the vacancies that we've got. It is an issue. Post-Brexit, a lot of people didn't come back to the UK, not just to Stafford Borough, so there's a lot of horticultural, agricultural jobs that are not taken up. People in hospitality decided not to return. Some of our rural businesses can't afford to pay the same wages as they can in the city. So a lot of people, particularly youngsters, we see out-migration, where 16 to 25-year-olds prefer to go and work in a city than in a local village. So that's an issue that needs addressing as well. It's also things about upskilling, and we talked about the Institute of Technology in Stafford and how important that will be in terms of making sure that for our sort of rural manufacturers that we've got the skilled workforce coming through and the youngsters are being trained in emerging technologies. We have an ageing population in the rural area, so people in their 50s might be choosing to retire and not want to go through and be upskilled in new technologies. That also plays a part in how we fill the gap in the labour market. So lots of work around skills that Mary and I are focused on at the moment. But it's across all walks of life. It's not just Stafford, but it just so happens that we have the most vacancies. I haven't put it on here. One of the other things is that we work closely with our education providers. So I've worked with Keele and Stafford University. How do we retain our graduates? How do we keep all the good people that we are training and educating in the borough, in the county, to stay and work in the borough? What do we need to do to make jobs more attractive? What can Mary and I do to talk to businesses to make their vacancies stand out so that people choose and go and join that company as opposed to another one? So there's lots and lots of business support that we're providing to help people address the skills issue as well, which is vital. As we put here, we had a restaurant come to us last week saying we don't know whether we can afford to serve lunch or dinner. We have to make a choice. We can't have the chef and the staff working all hours. We have to make a decision now whether we close completely. There is one of our pubs, sadly, that's closed last week because they simply couldn't get a chef, and they doubled the salary. We're talking from a tremendous, huge amount. They simply could not recruit a chef, so they unfortunately had to close. We can't do an awful lot about that at the moment, other than work with the education providers, work with the hospitality venues, and try and make the jobs in the sector more attractive and bring people in. So that's a big thing on my agenda at the moment, as it is across the county. Visitor economy, 5.6. So I look after the rural economy and the visitor economy, sort of maps over. I was quite surprised, but I asked the DMP for this, that how do we compare to other districts in terms of how much we generate directly and indirectly? And we're second behind New Orleans in terms of the visitor economy revenue from people coming into the borough and spending either directly with our venues and our providers or indirectly as a result of visiting the borough. And it's a huge amount because, we haven't got a Lichfield Cathedral, we haven't got a Drayton Mary, we haven't got Norton Towers, and yet we managed to be the second highest producer in terms of the visitor economy, in terms of revenue. And I think it's because we've got such a broad offering across the whole of the borough. We're really rich in our assets, whether it's our park, our heritage, our assets, our shopping centres, our towns, our villages, our walkways, Cannock Chase. I was at Trenton last week, Trenton Estates, to talk to them there about all the things they're doing this year. Their visitor numbers are up back pre-pandemic. I spoke to some of the coach drivers at Trenton Estate, and one guy come from Blackpool, another coach was from London, another coach was from Brighton. Manchester, a huge amount of people travelling into the area. So it's how do we keep those people staying in the area and moving, spending more time than stopping overnight. I went to the county showground a couple of weeks ago. Their numbers are almost back to pre-pandemic. They're winning new events from other venues next year. New exciting events are coming into Stafford that would normally be either at the NEC or at Manchester Arena. So there's lots of attractions and events happening in the borough. We just need to harness those visitors and make sure that we try and have them stay overnight and spend in and around our town. So quite a bit of work to do on the visitor economy. We work with the DMP. As members know, we pay into the DMP, so I make sure that I sit on the working group and that Stafford Borough is high on their list in terms of the activities that takes place. Connectivity is a bugbear for everybody. I don't really know what we can do about that. The Rural Services Network, the Country Alliance, the County Councils, everybody's talking about connectivity and how important it is to our rural economy. You know, there are plans for the government to roll out Project Gigabit. There's going to be really difficult areas of the borough that won't receive gigabit or high-end broadband. It's just not economically viable for it to be installed there. And you know, that is another thing that we need to think about. Can we get clusters of people together to apply for funding to have their own service? But it's something that the county's digital and connectivity team are looking at and for how we deal with that. So that's a big issue with our rural businesses. One of the research that was carried out there by the Countryside Alliance was the fact that, you know, 80% of the businesses said if they had better connectivity, their business would be far more successful. So, you know, we're sort of lobbying, we're talking to everybody that we can, and we're putting our case forward with partners about how important that connectivity is. So really, 5.5, I just wanted to sort of think about where we stand in terms of comparison to other areas. So you can see on the table that you know, we have the most businesses, both rural and then across the whole of the districts, with 5,325 enterprises there that Mary and I support. Not all of them on a one-to-one basis, obviously we just don't have the manpower for that. But 36% of them are based in rural areas. Staffordshire average is 28%, so we've got a healthy number of businesses in there. Our top 100 employees, employers across the whole of Stafford, 72 of them are based in rural areas. And these are private businesses. This isn't sort of schools or health, it is the local authority. These are enterprises. And there's the 62. You know, between 50 and 249. So these are sort of top 100 businesses, and I manage on a one-to-one basis. They're my sort of portfolio of accounts that I look after. So they really do play a part, these top 100 businesses. And I'm not saying we give them special treatment, but I probably work with them on multiple levels, whether it's their HR, their finance, their production teams, their manufacturing teams. I get sort of involved with the whole organisation. I haven't put in here what the value of the business rates. We all know from the budget figures what we attain in business rates as a borough council. But I think it's important to know that 42% of our general fund comes from business rates. The rest is made of council tax. And 22,000 of those rural businesses pay into that 42%. Of the contribution to our general fund. I think it equates, last time I looked at those businesses that were in our rural areas that were in commercial properties, I think the rateable value of those properties was around about £65 to £70 million in terms of rateable value property. Now obviously we don't receive that funding because it's all discounts, but it just goes to show you know, what the properties are that those enterprises occupy. So it's vitally important to keep that revenue coming up. And then 5.6 is really sort of a bit of response. As I said, this isn't a strategy. This is just what we do on a daily basis, what you know we're paid to do to deliver in our team to support the economic growth strategy, which we've all agreed and been approved. I put it in the report there about the rural economy, the economic strategy. I don't think this council is something we're going to just discussed today, the county strategy. It's not been adopted, but I can certainly share that with members. But it basically sort of is interesting to us because they talk about digital connectivity. They want to stimulate enterprise and innovation. They talk about basing the strategy around the five rural hub towns, Stone being one of them. But as I say, this is the county rural strategy, and if it's adopted, we will naturally support where appropriate, if it sort of mirrors what we desire for our areas. So that just leaves basically the fact that, as Craig mentioned, the funding. So all European funding finishes in June 2023. So all European regional development funding grants business support ceases. So any fully funded business support campaigns which were delivered by the Chamber of Commerce, by ESPEN, by Staffordshire BIC, by the County Council, anything that was funded out of Europe finishes. So there's going to be a big gap in June in terms of paid business support. So we are hoping that in the Chancellor's budget on Thursday, that they stick with their promises of the Levelling Up Fund, which was written by Michael Gove in the Levelling Up White Paper, that basically said the UK Shared Prosperity Fund is going to be delivered to local authorities at a local level, and we will write our own plans and what we're going to do with it because we know our local economies best. So as Craig mentioned, we've delivered that investment plan, as have all the other districts, and we're waiting to hear back if the funding is still going to continue in the Chancellor's budget. So that's £4.5 million, a good chunk of that will be into our sort of rural areas. Obviously Stafford Town Centre, there's the future high street funding that's in place for that particular project, but things like Stone and Eccleshaw, the surrounding villages and all the other areas, we've written a plan there that basically covers an awful lot of activities and programmes. And the same goes with the Rural England Prosperity Fund. We were only one of four districts to get that in the county, so it's, we have 480,000, Lichfield received 400,000, Moorlands received 490,000, and South Staffs I think had 460,000. No other districts received any funding. And as Craig mentioned, we've had to write a very brief addendum as to what, you know, we think we would like to spend this money on. We haven't detailed any projects, we haven't put a call out for any projects. We'll do that once we know the funding's actually arrived. And that rural funding doesn't, we don't get first payment until April 2023 if it goes ahead. And that's when we start to look at projects. I'm just whizzing through this because I'm aware of time. So page 17, basically, I just wanted to put on the second paragraph there some of the things that we do, because I think within the term economic development and economic growth, it isn't always clear. We do so many things in that particular service area, but my bit is focused primarily on supporting businesses, growing our business rates income, making sure our residents have got the good quality jobs and we've got the right businesses. So I won't go through all of them. This free one-to-one business support, we've always done that. People don't have to come to us and pay or join a membership to receive business support. We give that as part of the service of the local authority. Generating new inquiries, Mary and I, that, as I mentioned before, that's what we do basically to generate people, get them to move into the borough. But also, we do an awful lot with the existing businesses in terms of making sure that they stay in the borough and they're not attracted by other areas to move out of the borough if a different sort of area is offering more than we can. So there's sort of three or four businesses, and I won't mention them, that I've worked with or we've worked with in the past 8 or 9 months that were growing. They wanted to take on more space, they wanted to build another factory, they wanted an additional unit. And they came to us because they were being sort of enticed or encouraged to move to other areas. Outside of the county, so we had a couple of businesses that were looking at Derby, somebody was looking at Coventry, somebody was looking at Wolverhampton. So we had to work really hard to make sure that they stayed in the borough by sort of almost reselling the benefits of why it was good that they came to the borough in the first place and why they should stay with us. And that we pulled together all sorts of things for them, some funding packages, some skills support, some marketing support, how can we help them with into new marketplaces. And you know, I'm glad to say they stayed with us and they've moved into bigger premises, which of course means increased business rates and more jobs. So we work a lot with our existing businesses as well as looking at new ones. So there's a whole raft of sort of things that we do here, just you know, on a daily basis, which is part of our everyday jobs. The only thing I wanted to pick up on there is I was quite surprised, and we got this from DEFRA, that we have 682 farms in the borough. It's difficult for us to identify them. They're not registered, obviously, on our business rates register. They're not registered, basically, anywhere else. So we're trying to pull together, you know, sort of a database of farms so that we can actually find out what they look in terms of diversification. Because we've had some really, really good farms that have diversified. Things like Copper Beach, Dramping site, that's a really good site that's come out of a farm there. Obviously, everybody knows about Amazon Farm. We've got quite a lot of farms now that have got their own produce, and they've got a farm shop. And in the past, we've had some funding to be able to do that via DEFRA. We had the Leader Fund, if anybody remembers that. There's about 10 or 15 projects, rural projects, that received about £170,000 of rural funding to help those farms diversify. So Mary and I have got quite a bit of work to do to identify the farms, reach out to them. Not everybody will want to think about diversification. There might be farms that think we've had enough, but it's the last generation and we're not interested. So we want to try and find the farms that want to look into new markets, new products, branch out and really help support them and grow those areas. So that's a big piece of work that we're doing at the moment. So I think really from the report, it's allowed us to actually look at our rural areas and think, actually, this is what is sort of going on. This is the help that we need to give. But actually, what a great rural economy we have at the moment. And sometimes I just don't think we've raised and we've spoken enough about how good we are in our rural areas. And this report, I think, sort of demonstrates all that's going on there.
All right. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
And thank Mary as well. Because I asked who... I thought I knew who Mary was, but I asked Andrew. So I know who Mary is.
I think I don't know how long she's been here, Chair.
A long, long time, Mary.
Years or something. And I think before that she was at the county, working in the rural economy at the county
council
as well. So.
Okay. We turn back then, members, to page 9. And Councillor Chris Barron is first.
Thank you, Chairman. I just want to ask a general question on the whole thing of the party. Do you actually deal with mobile businesses such as specialist mobile locksmiths who deal with vehicles as well as buildings and things?
Yes, so when we were delivering the additional restrictions grant, you know, when all the COVID grants came forward, there were a lot of businesses that came forward and said, I run a business, but I don't qualify for COVID funding because I'm not in rateable value premises, so I didn't automatically get a payment. But this is what I do. So it was very similar when we were looking at funding some of the market traders, because a lot of the market traders, some of them were saying, well, we're not actually based in the borough, but we trade in the borough, but they were based outside. So what do we do about funding those? And it was the same with the mobile providers. We had a lot of, as you say, locksmiths. We had driving instructors, hairdressers, wedding operators come to us and say, we're based at home, but we're not getting any support. So, yes, absolutely, we will deal with people. If they're based in the borough, either as a business or a resident, then we can offer them support. What we can't do is offer support to people that are based outside of the area, who probably come into the borough to sell their services. But, yes, absolutely. Yeah, please do.
Okay, I've got it. Did you put your hand up, Brian?
We're just
pages.
One on page 11.
Now, well, let's do the pages first.
We get there.
Yeah. Okay, page 9.
Sorry, mine's more similar to Chris Barron's. It's more of a general comment to make, if I may.
You can.
I'm responsible for a rural ward, so I would really welcome seeing the data for Swinnerton and Alton.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's not, you know, a comment specifically on this report, it's a UK thing as well. I think, you know, with the low pound that we've got at the moment, I think a big emphasis on exporting would be very worthwhile
yes, okay.
being forming part of the plan.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I thought it was absolutely excellent.
Thank you. Exports. I didn't include everything in here because it would be an enormous report, obviously, but particularly for farming as well. Let's have a look at the whole export. We do talk to the DTI regularly. Again, a lot of the funding has stopped. So with the UK Shared Prosperity Fund and the Rural England Fund, because we haven't particularly the Rural England Fund defined the criteria yet, that could be something that we could look at.
I caught up with the Staffordshire Chamber of Commerce last week, and that was something that I stressed to them. They were keen to look at is there some funding costs that they tapped into. So
absolutely, We should do, we should really look at that, but we'll do it. I'll get the data over to you.
Yeah, perfect, thank you.
Thanks.
I thank you. Right, page 9. Over the page to 10. Any questions? Page 11.
Yes, please do answer the question.
Just so Craig could probably answer that. I'm from a generation that knew farms had so many acres. It says here 45,000 hectares. Haven't a clue how many acres it is. Can I deal in acres, please? You ask a farmer what size his farm is, and he'll tell you it's X amount of acres, not hectares.
You times it by 2.47, don't you?
2.471.
Yeah.
To be exact. Yes.
Thank you.
Whatever that is.
Okay.
You're in charge of the economy.
Anyone else on page 11? Page 12? Right.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Page 12.
Fourth paragraph down. You were asked to try and get to these other people where you can't visit. Webinars?
Yes, we're talking about thinking about putting some webinars on, absolutely.
Okay.
And also some of our rural hubs have offered free use of their rooms.
Yeah.
So Amanda at Rally Hall, she's got a room there that we use. Some got a room that we can use. Community halls, anything where we can put a roadshow together just to bring businesses together. We really feel, you're absolutely right, we really feel there's a gap there that we need to reach out to businesses. But webinars, certainly, we can do that.
Okay, then, Paige.
Can I just say that NICA is actually part of Newcastle University, and if anybody's interested in the rural economy, I do recommend looking at the work that Newcastle University does. They're absolutely exceptional and have led the way in this country and actually in Europe on the importance of the rural economy, both in Europe and in England.
Right.
And do look at their work. They do run courses. If anyone wants to go and have a trip up to Newcastle, join them.
Right, thank you.
Can I just ask, are you talking about our Newcastle or
Newcastle University.
I used to drive my warship, yes.
Where you drove your warship?
Up north.
Yeah, up
good.
Up north.
That's fine, thank you.
Right then, let's turn to page 13.
Yes, sir.
Right, D.
Thank you. Excellent report and really interesting, particularly as I'm inside Stafford, so it was really interesting because it does affect people, physical work and whatever. But particularly on 5.5, it was interesting with the UK post Brexit. We all knew this would probably happen, and COVID obviously exacerbated that at a much faster rate. One of the big problems with agriculture or rural communities is lack of housing or affordable housing, even in the rental sector, transport particularly. So are you, I know your remit is business, but are you linking in with housing or anything like that to help bring in people into the rural communities to enable them to work? Because, I mean, Brexit has had a huge effect on this, hasn't it?
Yes, it
particularly
has.
Your agriculture. I mean, just close to me, Darrington, I mean, they were actually on Countryfile talking about the lack of workforce because they can't bring them in from Europe.
Yeah.
Can I pass that to you, Craig? So I don't actually get involved with housing.
Yeah, I know.
We're on the same floor, but thank you for your comments, and they're absolutely valid.
So through you, Chair, I think one of the uses of having a service like you have here at Stafford, where you have economic growth, development planning, and housing and health all in one service area, is that you can talk to each other and you can share ideas and develop policy. And interestingly, one of the things that's coming out of the local planning solutions is the amount of growth that we want in our rural areas, in other words, outside of Stafford and Stone in particular, and getting that balance right between sustaining these communities and not spoiling their character and appearance. And you get two schools of thought. There are those people who say we're not putting enough housing into those areas to sustain them, and those who say we're doing too much. So it's about striking that balance. And I think when we have, this is a prime example of the kind of argument you'd like to make to people about, if we don't keep regenerating our rural areas, they will die, you will lose facilities, you won't have the infrastructure. So we do have to get that balance right in making sure we put some housing in there at affordable prices. And I'm sure this will come up later on in the agenda tonight, about whether we're doing enough to support people as a borough council, working with partners to make sure that A, the housing is available, and B, it's at the right prices and or rent levels.
Right, Councillor Beattie.
Key village policy, and
yes, I've got it.
I've thought this for a long time, but key village policy is very difficult for smaller rural villages. It means that the services go into a large village, I mean, based on the criteria that they have, they might have a bus service and the other village hasn't, which is ridiculous, since none of them have bus services. So it's based on services. And what's interesting is that as we move to a world where the internet becomes more predominant, and I'm making this case with Alex, particularly with the local plan, our outlook for the next 10 years beyond should be different, because you don't need to travel to work in the same way as you did. Now, in terms of the housing problem, the real problem has been that the quality of affordable housing, social housing, has been so poor in the rural areas. Even where you have housing associations, they tend to put less money into the rural properties than they do into others. And generally, with the problems of green energy and so on, it's becoming really important that we upgrade the properties that we've got. The other thing is that, to my own knowledge, that young people, to be quite honest, when they're that young, you know, when they're youngsters working, they would rather live in the town, to be frank, than they would live in the rural community working there. So there are lots of pros and cons to it. It's not as easy as it sounds. And yes, we need more affordable housing, but it's very
difficult to do.
You know, when they do local affordable housing surveys, everybody comes forward and says, "Oh, yeah, we definitely need more affordable housing."
Oh, all right.
When it comes to it, it's not taking.
I didn't see him. Thank you for that. I've been told that Councillor Pert wanted to say something. You may come to the table.
Thank you, Chair. We might talk about housing.
Got you next.
I can't subscribe, honestly, to the view that there's a differential of quality on new built houses in the rural areas than there is in the town.
I wasn't talking about new build.
Sitting on the board of a housing association, there's absolutely, definitely no difference. But I did want to pick up a really important point. The local plan policy tries to encourage the delivery of affordable housing for Indigenous people within the rural areas, rather than trying to encourage, you know, a wholesale movement out of our towns and villages. And so if there is enough demand based on a housing needs survey, and that's up to landowners, developers, parish councils, community groups to come forward and to bring that forward, then there is always the opportunity to work with other partners, whether it's landowners or housing associations, to meet that need. And so I think there is always a bit of a balance between, you know, the Indigenous need and obviously things like employment, which is really quite important. But I don't think we'd want to suggest there's a wholesale movement out into the rural areas.
Chair?
Yes,
I wasn't suggesting that. I have to say, I would live in the countryside, and I'm a fortune, and I earn a really good salary.
And James,
but then even if I could, I wouldn't be contributing as an employee within the countryside. And it's the chicken and the egg, which comes first. So if you can't attract people to the countryside that they can afford to live there, you farmers can't get people to work for you, because unless you've got transport or you work in a rural business, you can't get transport. I haven't got transport. I live in Vassage, which is in the middle of Stafford, you know, or on the outer. I can't get into Stafford unless I walk on a Sunday or I drive. Great. My children don't drive, so how could they? They could, you know, they could work in a rural community and contribute to that community, but can't because they don't drive and they can't afford to rent a house in the country. And it's well known, there's been plenty of programmes on the television about, I don't want to call it NIMBYism, because one of the reasons you move to the country, because it's quiet and it's nice and you're not overlooked. So you can understand people having paid a huge premium, but that doesn't help the situation and the problem. And it is about providing appropriate and affordable, particularly rental houses in the sector. Because the sector probably doesn't pay that much either. So that's it. Thank you.
Joan, just answering that point to some extent, one of the problems is that any development times at 10 houses doesn't have to provide affordable, and that's what would make a difference in a lot of areas.
A minute.
A little bit of history.
No, in a minute. I have to wait a moment. Right, I've got Councillor Chris Barron. Is this on the same subject?
It is, Chairman, yes.
Okay, then.
I'd like to just say, if I may, that I do think I understand what Francis was saying about housing associations and in the rural areas, because I know somebody who's having a problem within the housing association at the moment, because the houses in the rural area, they don't seem to do the work properly. However, that's beside the point. It's already been mentioned about transport and etc. How it's a catch-22, because how do you encourage people? You can't encourage transport, for example, bus companies, to take buses out into the rural areas if people don't use them. So it's a catch-22. You've got to encourage people to use the public transport, and then the companies might agree to provide them. It really is a very, very difficult one, and I don't think anybody tried to do it, having meetings with certain bus companies. It's difficult. I really don't think it's possible. Because you can't, as you did just say, at Vassage, there's no buses after a certain time. And there's very few anyway. And it's very, very difficult to get in and out. So how on earth are people living in rural areas?
Right, thank you. We've got Council Winnington wish to make a comment, a farmer.
Thank you, Chairman. I appreciate you being given the chance. Before I start, I've got quite an interest in as a farmer, and I'm also indigenous to Ranton. So there you go.
I love indigenous.
I think a really important point here, and it's that the £500,000 is important, totally agree with that, but I think we've got, from my point of view, being a local council in a rural area, one of the biggest obstacles is planning. So apologies for saying that. So the housing bit is fair comment, and I've said before, we need to try and get the villages back to life, and the only way we'll come back to life is with more residents and using the services. But also, an important bit of this report, and for me the bit that really sticks out, is that there's 3% unoccupied. Now, 3% to me, in terms of turnover and such like, means that we're full.
Yeah.
Now, as we go forward with the local plan, I think it's important that, that we make sure that there's capacity in there for rural, not farming, just rural businesses to go forwards. And that will, if it's in the plan, it'll encompass the housing factor and also the transport factor and connectivity, because we need 5G connectivity regardless of where we are in the borough. If you're at the back end of Sandon, you still need connectivity. So all those points are really important, and I hope you take them on board. The final point, sorry Chair, is that there's £5 million. It doesn't start until April of next year. There's 24 months to get all those plans in place, the planning in place, and the money spent. So you will be busy.
Thank you.
Right, thank you. Right, we've got Councillor James.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I was just going to support what Councillor Pert said. A few years ago, housing needs assessment was carried out in Swinnerton, and it was identified that some housing was needed for the local people, and they came forward with a rural exemption site of 12 houses. So unless the needs assessment is carried out, we can't do anything.
Can I make a comment on that? Because I, at my age, I've forgotten where Lord Stafford lived. Swinnerton, and I can remember this because I was chairman of the Housing Association, they built the houses up Swinnerton with heating pumps buried in the ground. They're really modern ideas. And of course now we've been taken over by somebody else. But then, you know, we should moan a bit at them. But I remember that Stafford and Rural built those houses really up-to-date properties. Right, now I've got another intruder wants to speak.
Thank you, Chairman. I only came for the mince pies.
Yes, I know you did.
Excellent report, the huge, excellent report. It's really well presented and it's very, very interesting. But one thing I want to ask you though is, you only mentioned Brexit once, very short, very, very small. Should it not be throughout the report? Brexit must have had such an effect on the rural economy and rural business, and it's hardly appears in your report.
Yeah. Right. Well, I underline that paragraph as well, so. Okay. Now, does anybody else want to talk on page 13?
The question is, how it's affected the rural economy? It doesn't actually tell us anything. It doesn't tell us that.
Chairman, we'll have to do a special analysis for that.
Right. Okay. We'll move on. Right, over the page to 14. Dee wants to, got a question on this page.
I've got two, if that's okay, Claire. One is a very quick one. Which Walton are you referring to?
Sorry, which page?
On page 14, 5.7, connectivity.
Walton Stafford.
That's Walton Stafford. Right.
There's quite a huge chart which I'm happy to share. I didn't want to build it into a report, but it shows you all the wards, all the connectivity.
There's a Walton Stone.
That's what it is. I just took a snapshot, but more than happy. It's a huge chart.
Yeah, there's two Waltons.
Two
Waltons,
right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It depends on where you live, the other one is. Isn't it? It's the private sector. It's the companies that decide whether to put it in.
Yes, it is.
So, are you working with the companies, or are you encouraging the companies? Because these areas do have a lot of small businesses, don't they?
Yes. Yeah. So we don't actively get
sort of involved in the delivery part of what's being rolled out, but we work very closely with the Staffordshire County Council team. So Paul Chapman there is managing the whole of this sort of rollout programme. So he feeds data through to us, as he has done with his saying, this is where the areas are struggling. And they also work at county level with the providers to talk to them about saying, what are you doing about getting into these areas? And his response to me is some of the providers are saying it's just too flipping expensive to go into these little areas and put in a small network and should be more sort of private investment. So we're sort of working with the county on that to say, what are they doing at a county level to make sure we get through to as much as we can? But as you know, when it's private businesses, it's,
it's where they chase the money, don't they?
Jeremy, can I just add to that? That I think 5% is something like 22,000 businesses and households that are not being supplied. It's an essential part of our infrastructure now.
Right, thank you. The that was page 14, wasn't it? Yeah. Right. I think one of the comments was made about that information about the broadband.
Yes.
I think that really surprises a lot of people that a place like Walton, Stafford hasn't got much in there. Right. Let's turn our attention to page 15, and it's interesting that bit about the it's under the table and it goes on 10 businesses employ more than 250 staff on site. It'd be interesting to know what happens when this PET unit comes on site.
Absolutely, that will definitely bump things up. So we work closely with Pets at Home Care. So at the moment we're working with them to potentially, there's 800 vacancies
in that particular unit,
that particular site. Some of them will be taken up by people moving from Stoke, some of them might be people relocating from Northampton. But again, it's part of our role in terms of skills, so I'm working with them, they've got five HR teams, so I'm working with them to look at how we attract some of the people to take up some of those positions. And it comes back to things like the lifestyle brochure that we created. You know, they're sending them out to people and recruitment agencies saying this is what's all good about and great about living, moving and working in Stafford. So we're doing all that we can. Because you're quite right, that'll be sort of 800 jobs at Pets at Home. If you look at the other development, which is PLP Stafford, which is the old NatWest data centre on the A34, that's been demolished. That's 350,000 square feet of new development space, and I'm working with a developer there to market that space. It should be finished by June of next year, but that will allow for a further 500 vacancies as well. So there's 1,300 vacancies between Pets at Home and the PLP Stafford development at Stone, which is on my mind, obviously, because it's just adding to the number of vacancies that we've already got. So that will bump those numbers up.
Yeah. Well, right. Page 16, then. Page 17. Over the page to 18. Any comments? Well, I'd like to make a comment at the very top of the page. Second paragraph. Continue with our beautiful borough promotion campaigns to highlight our three towns in the wider borough. We used to win best town, Flourish Town in the country. We actually won it. And I'm surprised, that we don't try that game again. Brighten up the town with flowers and things like that. People came from all over the county to visit Stafford. The headmaster at Longton High, I met him in the High Street, and I called him Sir because he was my boss at the time. But the point was he'd come all the way down from Stoke to have a look at our flowers. People were travelling all over the country to look at Stafford because we won the competition. So I think that's a somewhat remind the cabinet. All right, anybody else on that page? Right, before we close this, I'd like to thank
Marty
and Mary.
For their
work, and also say that I was impressed with that web page that you produced in September.
Well, thank you. The lifestyle.
Yeah, I was very impressed with that. So thank you very much. That was well worth. And I know my grandson is going to be interested when I give him this copy.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Can you know, report?
Sorry, we move again. We ask the two.
Report, so noted, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Seconded. All those in favour, please note. Or you can join us for the wine, etc., if you wish. Yeah. Okay, now it is knocking on. It's 8:10. We come then, Emma. Right, fees and charges. I noticed Tim Wilde's name's on this report.
It is, yes.
We had him on television at one time, didn't we?
Yes.
Okay, so you present the report and then we'll do the questions.
Okay, thank you very much, members. This is the fees and charges report 2023 from the 1st of April. Although inflation is running at 12%, the guidance was to look for an average of 5% increases or what the market could bear. So what's contained in the report is there are no new fees proposed in planning area, and there are no increases to 12.3%. I'd just like to draw your attention, the only changes were being in paragraph 5.4, where the car parking charges are frozen and the market's charges are also all frozen, which was proposed in 2000.
Right.
Take any questions?
Okay then, we'll start on page 20.
Apologies, Chair, I did say that I've mentioned that there are a full copy of the fees and charges on the members' portal.
And when did that get published? Was it
and
today?
It was published on the day that the Cabinet papers went out.
Right, okay then.
That meant the previous Cabinet. Yeah, so there was
no fee there. And they came out, was it yesterday?
Yesterday, full council.
Right,
yeah.
So if you want to see the fees and charges for this committee, you have to look at that portal, and it's linked into the Cabinet papers. Sorry, Cabinet is on the same day as the Council. Okay, so we're now on page 20, 21. Yes, Dee?
Thank you. In regard to 5.4, where, I mean, it's given the current financial state of this country, it's quite nice to hear that you aren't increasing, or the council are not in, frozen charges, or aren't increasing in these areas. But because actually we've been, I understand, arguing against the increases for some years. Are we in such a good financial position that we don't need to increase the charges?
Through you, Chair, paragraph 6.1 does set out that there is a budget shortfall as went to Cabinet, and as part of the budget last May, last February also indicated that. Essentially, in terms of these charges, I think in the past we have put charges up, and it's in about what the market can bear. So if you put the charges up, that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get the income anyway. So, you know, it's about striking the balance and looking at the overall context of the situation to the residents and to the finances.
Through you, Chair, just to respond, had we put up the council tax by a small percent over the years, wouldn't have this covered the 2 million black hole?
This is the committee here. All right. The committee is not sitting over there.
Sure, yeah,
If you disagree, fair enough, but no talking to the people sitting in the public area.
Oh, sorry, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. I will bear that in mind, Councillor James. Right, speak again, Dee. And you can repeat what you were saying, because I, being deaf, I have to listen carefully to what people say.
Thank you, Chair. I asked whether had the council decided to put up the council tax by a small amount each year rather than a reduction, would we now be able to cover the 2 million black hole offices in 6.1?
No, we understand that, Emma, that being an officer, you are restricted to answer questions like that, but it is a fact.
No, it isn't a fact.
I said no comments from the public area unless I invite you to the table.
Chairman,
and bear in mind this is my last year on this council, and I intend to conduct this committee in the manner it should be conducted. It's not a fun, it's not a goal for everybody. So please remember that. You're invited to the table, and you speak when I'm invited to the table, and we don't have people talking to the people in the public gallery. So I'll go back to the officer and the cabinet member who's sitting at the table. And you want to speak, I'll invite you in a moment.
Chairman, it isn't a fact, so I think I want to answer that by saying it's not a fact, and I'm sure the written answer will supply all the information that explains why it's not true.
Right, we'll think about that ourselves. Right, we're on page 21. Christine Barron.
Thank you, Chairman. Yeah, I'm just referring to the markets and the challenging trading environment. It's not surprising because, as we all know, the Guildhall Centre, the people who own it, closed it. And you can't get through now, so you're not getting passing trade. You're not getting footfall that you used to get. So you're getting people coming in from Crabbery Street and Earl Street, whatever it's called, Broadway, and they're coming in and going back out again. You can't just walk through. So that's why the footfall isn't the same and the trading isn't the same, which is a shame because we have some very good new traders in there. And I think it's such a shame.
I think that's it. I don't know whether a number of people understand what has actually happened is with the businesses going out of the mall itself, they have put a wooden partition up, and I wanted to go to the market, and then discovered, of course, that the only way I could go was to go back out onto the street and go round, because the partition means that you cannot get into the market entrance at the bottom end. And of course, that is affecting the market itself, the indoor market. And I would hope, you know, if Craig would actually attempt to talk. I know the council is trying to talk to the owners of the mall to find out what's actually going on, but I think it's important that until decisions are made as to the relocation of the market, that we try to make sure it stays viable. So I think that's a point that ought to be made. And we'll go back to Dee again.
Thank you. Again, to follow up Councillor Chris Barron's comments, I have a number of traders that live in my ward who contact me regularly about the market. But one of the things they do say is they'd like to pass on their heartfelt thanks to the officers and the team of that work within the market about the amount of work that they are doing to try and promote the market, because they recognise that there isn't the passing trade. So, you know, there's Facebook and various other media, social media and everything. But as sooner we know what's happening, I think that will help and to continue to promote. Which a big thank you to the staff and the officers that look after me.
Right. Okay, then that's page 21. And I will draw your attention again to the bottom of the page, 5.6. Any, all fees and charges will appear on the members' portal, and that is before the it's linked into the council agenda.
Yeah.
All right. So we go over the page, and we have talked about that budget gap that's in 6.1. Okay. Now over the page again to. That's 22. We go to 23, and we now come to. Sorry, hang on a minute, because there's figures somewhere. Oh, this is the one. This is the one that Tracy is going to do. Well, supposed to do with. All right. Well, somebody propose we accept that report.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Same two members again. Right. All in favour, we're accepting the report.
Yeah.
Thank you, Emmett. That's it. Okay, we go now to agenda item 7D, and it's a Tracy Redpath. Who's presenting this?
If you take the report page by page, Chair, and any questions, the office.
Okay, then. All right. Craig, I've got Craig's name written by it. All right, we're on page 24. All right. We move on to page 25. All right, anybody got a question on 5.2? The thing on that, and I know that I've got it marked up with Craig's name alongside, what chance have we got at the present time of getting any of this funding that we're asking for? You know, what's your prediction? I know it's up in the air, but...
If we believe that with the UK SPF, for example, that we've been given an allocation, as have other districts and boroughs around the country, and we've been asked to effectively submit a plan to draw that money down, then you would hope that that money has effectively been ring-fenced and is protected from anything that might be coming on the 17th. So we're all waiting. So I think we've got a better chance of getting, say, UK SPF than possibly something like the Levelling Up Fund, which is a competition which the money may well be taken away from us. But we don't know. We have to say. And when I say taken away, it may be that the fund is reduced down in totality across the country and there's less money available.
Yeah.
That might be a realistic proposition, but we don't know yet. So it's very difficult to answer your question. I'd like to think, though, that the announcement of the Rural England Prosperity Fund, that £500,000 that we talked about earlier, that is on top of that £4.6 million, and again, that's been effectively allocated to ourselves to draw down through some work that's ongoing now. So I think we've got a good chance of getting the UK SPF plus the Rural England Prosperity Fund. I'm less certain about the Levelling Up Fund.
Could I ask you and the Cabinet Member, well, even those that are sitting in the public area, yeah, bear that in mind.
I'm not bothering coming.
If we do get this money, would an email be sent out to all the councillors to let us know?
Yes, I'm sure. Yeah.
Rather than wait for it to appear in the press.
Yeah, of course we.
Because a number of us, I do actually get the local newspaper. One of my sons buys it, but. For suddenly to be told things that should have been told to us as councillors, to read it in the press before we even told, it'd be nice, because I think a lot of people are concerned at this moment in time. I mean, even members sitting on this side obviously show their concern. So I think we should, you know, if kindly would do that. Right, so we're up
pay. Just add to that, the money. Members will know what we have put in for.
Yes.
Because we've announced that that's gone out publicly. All we're saying is that this money has been approved or not approved by government. What some members get confused about is that they think they can put in local bids for a pot of money that we've received. It doesn't work like that. is a specific project to allocated funds, and members really need to understand that.
Right, thank you for that then. Page 25. Okay, 26. We're on the charts on 27. And I hate to do this. It is Paul. Would you like to come to the chair? Because I think the only comment that I've got, and I know someone else mentioned it to me, is that one about the building control. All right, so Paul's going to talk about that for a moment.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, it's the, I presume it's the L13, which is the performance which was below target for the processing of and registering of applications within 3 days of receipt. There's a very clear reason for that, which I will hopefully explain. The downward trend started actually in quarter one slightly, which was 1% below target. The reason for it is there was a major change in building regulations on the 15th of June. New energy efficiency standards came in, requirements of electrical vehicle charging came in, and requirements related to overheating of homes came in. And a lot of applicants wanted to avoid having to do those. So if they submitted their applications before the 15th of June, and then they start work before the 15th of June 2023, they avoid complying with the new regulations. Consequently, we had a massive increase in applications that came in before the 15th of June. That then led to a backlog, which fed through to July figures. We worked on catching up on that, and by the time we got to September, we were back on track. So as last year's figures, we averaged at 96% registering within 3 days. So that was the reason. We got nearly a 70% increase in applications between mid-May and mid-June because of developers wanting to avoid building to the new regulations.
Right, well, thank you for that.
Yeah,
thank you. That explains that one. Okay, so that's page 27.
Councillor Trowbridge.
Am I allowed to ask a question?
Ask a question?
Yeah, of building control.
Could you come to the table?
L15 and L16.
From doing paper surveys to online surveys, and then we hit a problem. We haven't explained it well enough, I think, and we made it too long. So we shortened it, we explained it better. We're getting a higher response, we're getting a very low response rate, and you only have to have 1 out of 4, and it totally skewed it. Whereas now we're getting a higher response rate with a lot higher percentage.
Thank you. I hope I made
a
difference then, because at the last year's, I made a comment about
that.
Right, thank you for that. We go on to page 28. D.
Okay, 1.2.2. No target on providing affordable homes.
Yeah, through you, Chair. We just in terms of delivery, where we are in terms of the pipeline, and we would hope that in the quarter three and quarter four, you will see an increase and we will be more on target. Obviously, we ourselves don't develop the houses. We are reliant on third parties, and we would expect to see an increase. As I say, it's just literally where we are in the development cycle across the piece, really.
Right. Anybody else on page 28?
1, 2, 4, Chair.
Yeah, there's one down below. 1, 2, 4. And Victoria isn't here, so it's you again, Craig.
Yeah, so this really is a situation that is unfortunate, but we are reliant upon the County Council to help with searches, and if they can't properly resource or they have difficulties, then it impacts upon our performance. We are in discussion and dialogue with them to see that how we can improve in that area, or they can improve, and we hope that we won't be coming back to you in due course with the same problem.
Right, thank you for that. Yep.
So are you saying that all of this is done for the
is, yes.
Right, up to Councillor Phillips. Right, anyone else? Page 29, page 30, 31. Now, over the page of 32, those are the same items that we've just discussed. So anybody want to say anything about them at this stage before I move off? No? We're moving on to page 33. Any comments or questions on that area? All right. Okay then, over the page. Page 34. All right.
Thank you, Chair. In the forecast outturn, it says not net spending will be £2,336,000 left in budget. Can you say how many vacancies this is contributing to this? Is it job vacancies?
Through you, Chair, it principally reflects the parking income. So we've got additional parking income to be reduced to budgets for COVID, and it's increased more than we expected it to. So it's parking income, it is markets, it's the opposite markets income, and we've also had a lot more major applications this year, so that reflects through in that forecast outcome.
Right, thank you for that. That was page 34. Page 35. Anybody any questions on 35? Right, 36. I think a point that I made, a question that I should have asked at the pre-meeting, is about the market. But we've had this discussion about the fact that the mall is closed, and so therefore it affects the footfall through the market. Right. Thank you for that. And we turn to our attention to page 37. I'll take James first.
Thank you, Chair. You've got there around the Gypsy and Traveller site, under comments it says no viable site yet identified. My understanding was that the two sites identified.
I think, Chairman, this is retrospective, this report. I think that's the reason, isn't it? It's 3 months old.
Right.
I have to smile at that bit.
That's right.
Yeah.
Therefore, we may not be required to find a site ourselves. Yeah.
Okay. Right. D?
That was partly what my question was about, as it usually is, as you know. It's about the funding, because obviously everything that's gone up, is that enough with inflation to cover? I was aware that there had been two sites identified. Is that enough funding to go forward because of inflation? And again, with the Pilbrook pass improvements, which you've obviously mentioned with the Dufferin University, again, is that enough now?
Well, which is difficult, obviously, that's the money that's previously been agreed to go towards these schemes. We don't know until we go through a tendering exercise exactly how much it would cost. We are aware. Through our various sort of projects, the prices are going up, and materials are going up, everything's going up. So it's a bit of a difficult question to answer until we go through the exercise.
And Chairman, the point with the Gypsy and Traveller site is it may come forward through the private sector, and therefore we won't need the money for the private.
Right, okay, thank you for that. Anybody got any questions on that page? I asked the question what the words FHSF stood for.
future high street
as well. Yes, I was told that. Right, thank you for that. Would somebody move?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, the information be noted.
And it was seconded this time by Councillor Chris Barron. Right, we're moving on now. We're moving on now to the working. Hang on, mate. Yeah, the works programme. I've missed a page, so it must be 39.
38.
It is there, Jim. It's just stuck together. There you go.
Yeah, sorry about that. Yeah. 38, page 38. This is your area, members, and I draw your attention to paragraph 3. This is member-led overview and scrutiny. And we develop a worker programme for the committee to own. Now, it doesn't matter what political hat you wear, this is where you ask the questions. Even if it does embarrass members of the cabinet, our job is to scrutinise. And until May, I'm with you. Right. Did you want to say? You're all right there, James. Okay, then. Page 38, 39, 40. Now, the next meeting is January the 5th. And for the benefit, and I mentioned earlier, at the end of this meeting, I ask you to join me in pre-Christmas drinks, because it's tradition that the chairman does entertain the committee before Christmas, and this is the last meeting before Christmas. Right, so we've got there January the 5th and March the 7th, which, as you'll notice, it will be before the next council elections. Right, so there we are, what we're doing. You want to say anything, Andrew?
No, Chair.
Anybody else want to say anything? No?
I think it's a good programme, Mr. Chairman.
We accept the programme.
Yeah.
All those in favour? Right, well, thank you very much.
Sorry, you've got page 43.
Hang on a second, because the Brian Cross is saying something.
Page 43 is the report on the 106, which I know we've dealt with earlier, but it's just good that it's mentioned. I thought Councillor McEwen might have been here today, seeing he raised the
I don't. He didn't contact me, but he would have been invited, of course. Right, that's the end of the committee, and I do ask you to join me in tasting the Co-op mince pies and Aldi mince pies, and also those with a strong grip open the wine.